of a young violinist named Stephen Copes, and a 19-year-old violinist, and I asked you to write because I thought he attended Eastman School of Music. I have since learned that he's a student at Curtis Institute with his professor as Aaron Rosand, a very, very fine young violinist. And I said, if you wanted to write to him, just write in care of the Eastman School up in Rochester, which is wrong. He is a student of Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. So those of you that may have written up to Rochester, please write again and put it in care of Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. I sent to his address a letter saying that I'd play them, and that the response was very favorable. Well, please write and tell them how much you enjoyed it. If you did hear it 3 weeks ago, and maybe in a month or so ago, a couple of months, or maybe this summer, I'll play it again. Very, very fine young violinist. I love to give. I like to get these live recordings. I've even played some of young people in recitals, and I'm looking forward to someday one of my last students, since I'm retiring this year, as a young fourth grade boy that is absolutely superb, and is going to be a very fine pianist someday, and maybe I'll record some of his things and play them for you. There's lots of wonderful musicians out there, and I wish we could give them all some airtime. And we can. We can do it if they only just send us the tapes. Well, I've enjoyed being with you, and we're coming right up to Brain Damage with Eric Corley. And I hope you'll stay tuned. You're listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1 on your FM stereo dial, the first station of the 90s. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you again in about 3 weeks.
Date May 11th. Our moon always keeps the same hemisphere turned toward the Earth, but that doesn't mean we see only half the moon. Thanks to an effect known as libration, we're able to observe not 50%, but about 59% of the moon's surface from Earth. The moon's orbit is elliptical, or shaped like a circle that's been squashed. It's governed by laws of physics which state that the speed of a moon in orbit depends on the moon's distance. When the moon's closest to Earth, it's moving fastest in orbit. When it's farthest from the Earth, the moon is moving more slowly. The moon's speed in orbit changes, but the moon always rotates or spins at the same speed. The end result is libration, an effect whereby observers on Earth see a small portion of the moon's far side. Another libration effect is caused not by the spin of the moon, but by the spin of the Earth. At moonrise, we can see a little more of the moon's western edge. At moonset, when Earth's about to spin us away from the side of the moon, we see more of its eastern edge. So, from the Earth, we see about 59% of the surface of the moon, despite the fact that the same face of the moon is always turned toward our planet. It's only been in the past few decades that lunar missions have extensively photographed all of the moon, and astronauts have seen that elusive far side of the moon for themselves. Our program is Stardate. It's written and produced by Deborah Bird. For a copy of Stardate magazine, please send your name, your address, and a dollar for postage and handling to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory in Austin, zip 78712. And give us the name of your Stardate station, please. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block. Thank you.
already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Change.
Information.
What is this?
This call will cost 20 cents. Please enter your charge number now.
I don't know where these things come from, but I sure wish they'd go away. This is Brain Damage, and very good evening to one and all. It's another Saturday.
Goodbye.
It's another Saturday night, and we're going to have lots and lots and lots of fun here as we check in on various happenings around the campus, around the world, around just about everything. And it's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock, 16 degrees Celsius. We'll be going into the news in a little bit and all that kind of fun thing. You ever have a really close experience where you think you're going to die and you don't, and you get, like, really relieved? Well, I just had sort of an experience like that because I just put the Moscow mailbag tape on, and it seemed to be blank. I was going through the whole tape, and not a peep could be heard out of them. And I was very upset and annoyed and frustrated and worried. And, yes, afraid, because we know listeners get rather violent when they don't hear their weekly dose of Moscow mailbag. What happened was the machine on the bottom apparently has taken a liking to not putting tapes where they're supposed to be. You put a tape on there, it'll get threaded in the wrong place, and it won't get played. So we put it on the top machine, and what do you think we found?
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. And here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. Clarence Emo of Tucson, Arizona asks, tell me about your watch factories.
Hi, Clarence. Well, to begin, let me say we're second in the world in the production of watches. Not that I'm bragging. Most of these watches find their way abroad, but not into our own stores. Do you realize we produce something like 70 million watches a year? We export them to 80 countries, to Italy, to the United States, England, Germany, France, Canada, and also, strange as it may seem, to the home of watches, Switzerland. We have about a dozen or so factories up and down the country, and the watches they produce are called Pagliot, Slava, Sevani, Luch, Racchetta, Chaika, Molnia, and what have you. But you know what we do lack is good advertising. Seiko, for instance, in Japan spends up to $10 million a year on advertisements. But here's interesting news. A Soviet firm with its American partner has turned out a watch called Desert Shield. Stars and stripes on the background of a palm tree and two crossed swords, the symbol of Saudi Arabia, I think it is. The first 10 were gifts to United States servicemen in Saudi Arabia. You understand that this watch is to commemorate the war in the Gulf. These watches were even sold at Bloomingdale's in New York, and I understand they plan to present watch number one to President Bush. We also, incidentally, have a watch called Perestroika. It, too, is sold in many countries, including Switzerland.
Clarence also wants to know, how is mail processed in Soviet post offices?
Well, I won't go into the technical aspects, Clarence. In the major post offices, they have complicated machines like in any other country. I know they have a machine that reads our zip codes. You see, we print them on special dotted squares, so to say, and a machine reads it and sorts them. But here's what I want you to know. I got a letter from my friend in Brisbane, Australia. It took 18 days to get here. But a letter sent by a firm right here in Moscow took 13 days to reach my house.
Do people in Moscow use bottled natural gas in their apartments?
Well, the answer to that would be no. All apartments in Moscow have gas piped to them. We use gas for cooking only. All apartments also have hot water piped centrally, which is used in the bathroom, in the kitchen, and for central heating, naturally. The newer homes, though, use electric stoves in the kitchen. Bottle gas is used in rural areas where they do not have gas piped to their homes, and you'll find a lot of bottled gas being used in what we call our dachas, our summer homes.
How many American businesses have been established in your country?
They tell me there are about 150 joint enterprises with United States participation. Chevron, Eastman, Kodak, Johnson & Johnson, RJR, Nabisco, Mercator Corporation, and many more. But you know what is important is to keep in mind what the Wall Street Journal wrote, and I fully agree with what it wrote. Because of many bureaucratic barriers, of non-fulfillment of agreements by Soviet partners, increasing number of thefts, many joint enterprises functioning in the USSR are suffering losses and are becoming unprofitable. The Wall Street Journal wrote that just to register a joint enterprise, you spend a year making the rounds of ministries, administrations, offices, and what have you. I cannot but agree with it.
Would you talk about the mastodons found in the Arctic region?
I call them mammoths. Well, you know, they're the forerunners of our elephants. The best known found was in 1977, when in eastern Siberia they found, in permafrost, a 9-month-old baby mammoth, completely intact, with entrails, hair, everything. It had lain in its icy cradle for 44,000 years. And the scientists named the baby Dima. You know, many skeletons of these giants have also been found in other places, but skeletons. They say a complete skeleton is worth about $100,000, a complete frozen corpse, over $1 million. And I know we buy tusks from the local population up north. Baby Dima died of hunger, scientists tell us. He fell into a crevasse and passed away. And remains of plant food were found in its stomach. Mammoths weighed from 3 to 4 tons, and they ate 600 pounds of vegetable food a day. We also here in our country have a stuffed mammoth found whole and intact at the beginning of the century. But Dima was embalmed and made into a mummy. He's been exhibited in London, in Turin in Italy, in Tokyo, and I understand in the United States, too. He was studied by zoologists, biologists, biochemists, microbiologists, botanists, and other scientists. And in 1988, part of a mammoth that was 33,000 years old was found. His nails, hair, and everything was intact. I understand there are two complete skeletons of mammoths in the world. We have one.
And we're still answering questions from Clarence Lowe from Tucson, Arizona. He wants to know the current rate of exchange of the ruble dollar.
The official rate is $1 equals 58 kopecks. Turn it the other way around. 1 ruble is $1.70 approximately. But just recently, we introduced a new rate of exchange for citizens leaving this country. They pay 27.6 rubles for a dollar. This is actually the black market price of a dollar. You see, it works for some goods that are in short supply, but on the whole, to me, it does not make sense. I'll give you an example of what I mean. According to this rate of exchange, the average monthly wage of a Soviet citizen is about $10, which is, I think, nonsense. In the Soviet Union, according to this rate of exchange, you'd pay 6 cents for a gallon of gas, or 18 cents for a meal in a restaurant. Well, some life, I'd say.
Have your scientists noticed any immediate weather changes due to the oil burning in the Persian Gulf?
No, I haven't heard anything from our scientists, any changes in the country. But our scientists in Central Asia, I know, are urging that we cut back hunting waterfowl this spring. Scientists want reports on weakened, on sick, and oily waterfowl. On Iraqi territory, they tell us, plans producing chemical, biological weapons, and nuclear reactors have been destroyed, and as a result, our scientists have shown concern for birds that may fly from that area. But I know that scientists in the West speak about global warming, acid rain in Kuwait, ozone depletion, as a result of which there may be heightened ultraviolet radiation, that India may lose its monsoons, and this may lead to droughts. But they say this burning oil may, after all, not be as harmful as some scientists formerly thought. Kuwait, incidentally, has asked us to help put the oil-burning wells out, which I suppose we'll be doing. Incidentally, we have an agent patented in 14 countries, and Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates have shown interest. This agent turns oil that's spilt into the ocean, it turns this oil into food protein for phytoplankton and small fishes. On land, it's turned into mineral fertilizer. It's made by scientists of the West Siberian Oil Research Institute.
Clarence asks to describe book bazaars in the Soviet Union.
I'll just describe one. We call them fairs. In 1989, this was the seventh Moscow International Book Fair. 188 Soviet organizations participated, and something like 2,000 foreign firms and publishers from 65 countries around the world. What do these fairs do? They promote the export and import of books, and contracts are signed for copyrights. We annually buy something like $300 million worth of books and sell books worth much less, about $170 million. Incidentally, you may be interested to know that back in 88, there was an exhibition of American literature of recent years, and 350 American publishers sent 5,000 volumes.
And now a letter from Brian Backus of Winslow, Arizona. I would like your view on the Lithuanian crisis, and how do you perceive the government involvement, good or bad?
Well, you know, I've answered that question so many times, so I'll be very brief. What happened at the Vilnius television station has been condemned. It's been condemned in our media. It's been condemned in Parliament. Tanks and armored troop carriers should not be used to solve political problems. Naturally, Lithuania has the right to leave the Union. And, as recent opinion polls in the Republic have shown, most people there want Lithuania to break away. but it should be constitutionally done, we say. Of course, there are many problems. What are they? One of the problems is the non-Lithuanian population, the Russians, the Poles, the Belarusians, the Jews. I think you'll all agree that they should be treated as equals and should not be discriminated against, although there are many cases and signs of them being discriminated against. Another problem are the various factories and plants built by and belonging to the central government. The other problem is the military bases and the various military installations on its territory, and, of course, the hundreds, if not thousands, of economic ties that link the republic to the rest of the country. But let me conclude by saying this. If they're bent on leaving, they will, with time.
We've had many letters suggesting that we start regular programs on such subjects as chess, philately, numismatics, Soviet wildlife, a DX program, and a daily review of the Soviet media. What do you say, Joe?
Well, I'm afraid we cannot have regular programs on all these subjects. Once in a while, I think they should be reviewed. But I believe a DX program and a review of the media should be considered. I think that's a good suggestion.
Nicholas Peter Adams of Newark, New Jersey. Is the collecting of sports cards popular in this country?
You know, you praised my previous answer to you. You praised it to the skies. But I'm afraid today I'll have to disappoint you, Nicholas. We do not have sports cards. But about a year ago or so, we had cards of famous soccer players sold in sealed envelopes. If you collected a whole series, you got a much sought-after prize. Now, kids bought no end of these cards and traded them to make up a complete series. Sorry to disappoint you, Nicholas. No sports cards.
And now a letter from James Hannon of Oklahoma City. He writes, we toured in Russia in 1986 and found wheelchair travel difficult in Russia because of the lack of handicap facilities. But I always got help whenever I asked for it.
Well, I think that's a part of our character. We will offer help when asked for. But you're absolutely right, Mr. Hannon. Wheelchair travel is exceedingly difficult. We're only now realizing this and taking the first steps. More. Wheelchairs, as such, are exceedingly hard to get. And many are being sent as gifts from abroad. It's a bit degrading, but what could you do? And some are being bought. It's sad, but it's a fact.
Jim Reuter of Ann Arbor, Michigan asks, does the Soviet Union have FM and AM broadcasting?
Yes, we do. There are no end of stations up and down the country. Our AM frequencies are the same as yours, but our FM frequencies have a narrower range. From 67 to 76 megahertz. We also naturally have stereo broadcasts.
Terence Peterson of Oklahoma asks, when I visited Russia in 1979, the lines at Lenin's tomb in Red Square were frantically long. I wonder if the lines are as long today.
Yes, they are long. It's a tradition. It's part of our national heritage, I guess. It's been criticized by some. People say this is, there's something heathen about it. But I suppose if you could see Washington or Lincoln lying in state, I dare say many would flock to see them.
Well, Joe, how about a wrap-up joke?
Yeah, I haven't given one for some time. A man showed another man two pails. One was full of potatoes, the other pail was empty. He told the second man he'd show him how perestroika works, what it's all about. So he poured the potatoes from one pail into another. And then the second man said, how does that change things? It does not, said the first man. But think of the noise it creates.
Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. And address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are welcome.
That's the Red Army Chorus, I suppose. Moscow Radio Chorus, actually, if you want to be technical about it. With the Internationale, the former Soviet national anthem. And that came on the heels of Moscow Mailbag, the personal hygiene edition. Here on WUSB in Stony Brook, Brain Damage is the program. And regrettably, we won't be able to get to the 12-inch version of that. But we have many other things planned. Things that are fun and things that are educational as well. For instance, the news. The United States has gotten its first bit of good news on the prospect of a Middle East peace conference since Secretary of State Baker's visit to the region 2 weeks ago. Saudi Arabia and its Persian Gulf allies have agreed to attend proposed peace talks as observers. This is a major reversal for the Six-Nation Gulf Cooperation Council, which has refused to deal directly with Israel. President Bush is calling the development a positive step. But in Israel, the reaction is a bit more cautious. A statement from the foreign ministry says Israel hasn't heard any details yet and wants to learn more from Secretary of State Baker when he visits on Tuesday. Baker is in Syria for talks tomorrow with President Hafez Assad. A full-scale allied effort to repatriate Iraqi Kurds holed up in camps along the border with Turkey has gotten off to a slow start. Very, very slow start. By mid-afternoon, military officials said fewer refugees had arrived at an allied security station than had come in recent days. The allies hope to bring most of the 260,000 refugees back to their country within a month, but many are still afraid of Saddam Hussein's forces. Syria's vice president says conditions have improved for the possible release of 13 Westerners held hostage in Lebanon. He says the hostage holders want Israel to free the Lebanese prisoners it holds. The Syrian official spoke after 5 hours of talks in Beirut with Lebanon's president. That meeting coincided with a British appeal for the release of a retired pilot kidnapped 2 years ago. An estimated 20,000 people lined the streets of Las Vegas today for a parade to welcome home thousands of veterans of the Persian Gulf War. Some spectators tossed confetti from high-rise hotels along the hour-long parade route. Veterans of the two world wars, Korea and Vietnam, also were honored. There's a new call for the Los Angeles police chief's resignation. This one comes from one of the police officers indicted in the beating of motorist Rodney King. Sergeant Stacy Kuhn says Chief Daryl Gates has prostituted the police department's principles by fighting to keep his job. Kuhn's comments appear in a guest column in Sunday's Los Angeles Times. They're bracing for more rain tonight in the rain-soaked Nebraska panhandle. High water from yesterday's thunderstorm swept away some mobile homes in the town of Crawford. Officials are looking for one man believed lost in the flooding. And in southern Mississippi, one man has been found dead after a night of torrential rains. You've heard about the Grinch who stole Christmas. Now there's the mail handler who stole Mother's Day. A Pittsburgh postal worker is accused of stealing about 100 Mother's Day cards after little bunches of them turned up around the city. They'd all been opened. It's quite likely the thief was looking for loot. The postal inspector says a lot of people send their mom's money inside the cards. I've heard about low, but this... I'm not even going to touch the paper upon which that is written. That is so heinous. Disgusting. Horrible. Awful. Ugh. It's currently 16 degrees Celsius. That's 61 on the Fahrenheit scale. I can say that without even looking at the conversion chart for some reason. Tonight's going to be clear and mild, low in the mid-50s. Sorry, low in the low 50s. Ooh, a close call there. Sunday, mostly sunny, breezy, a little warmer with just a 20% chance of a late day or evening thunderstorm. High 75 to 80, but around 70 at the shore. Sunday night, fair and mild, low in the mid-50s. And for those of you that believe the world will still be here on Monday, it'll be sunny and mild, high in the mid to upper 70s, except upper 60s to around 70 at the shore. Once again, in downtown Stony Brook, it is currently 16 degrees Celsius at 61 on the Fahrenheit scale, and it's dark outside. Real dark. Well, folks, are you interested in doing the work of God? Interested in following the Lord's will? Well, then, what you should do is get yourself a machine gun, go to Bangladesh, and start murdering people, because it has never been clearer in anyone's mind that God seems to want the entire country to perish. You know, they were hit by earthquakes as well as everything else. They've been hit by cyclones, which last week we discussed, and cyclones turned out to be their version of hurricanes, which is basically the exact same thing. Then they get 3 tornadoes in 1 week, and now they're getting earthquakes and poisonous snakes on top of that. You know? I mean, if I was over there, I would just say, okay, whatever it is, I give up. You know, this is like no point anymore. So if you believe in fulfilling the will of the Almighty, I think it's been made pretty damn clear to one and all. And something else out of Jerusalem, today's New York Times. This is an example, folks. This is an example of what we mean when we say the media is biased and slanted and distorts the facts and just has its own particular way of looking at everything. And that's why when you listen to things like Pacifica News on USB, you know, it's biased too, by all means, but you should keep in mind that it's necessary bias to have something that's different from the bias that you're hit with every single day. Listen to this story, okay? I'm going to read this little four-paragraph story, and you tell me what is wrong with it, okay? The Israeli army today canceled an order to demolish the 3-room house of a Palestinian who was dead at the time that the military decided to punish him by tearing it down. It is very rare for the army to rescind an order to demolish or seal a house. The military, which has destroyed hundreds of houses belonging to West Bank or Gaza Palestinians charged with security crimes, says the measure deters other Palestinians. In its decision today, the military said it would nonetheless seal off the bedroom of the homeowner, Munzer Abdallah. Mr. Abdallah, a 33-year-old father of 6 who had never been arrested, was shot dead by a soldier after he hit another soldier with his car in Hebron in early April. The soldiers assert that he deliberately tried to run them down. Mr. Abdallah's family has insisted the incident was an ordinary traffic accident. That's the whole thing. Now, you look at this story, and the title is Israeli Army Rescinds Order to Raise Home. Now, aren't there a few things in there that kind of bother you? You know, the fact that that they're just nonchalantly sealing off the bedroom of a dead man for no particular reason, just to deter other Palestinians from what, you know? What are they deterring them from? And then this last paragraph here, what may or may not have been an ordinary traffic accident, this guy was shot dead after an ordinary traffic accident by a soldier. You know, it's like, that should be the main thrust of the headline. This guy gets into a car crash and a soldier kills him. But that's not it, you know? The main thrust of the story is the fact that the army isn't going to destroy the home of a dead man. It's completely insane. I mean, the world is a messed up place. And we need to keep focusing on the messed up aspects of it and not just take it for granted that certain things are messed up. I mean, you get into an accident and a soldier kills you. Even if you deliberately crash into a soldier, it's not right, you know? And there's no indication here that that was what happened. Boy, incredible things that you just sort of come upon. And if you didn't listen to things like Pacifica News, you probably wouldn't even feel, you know, a bit skeptical of whatever you see in the newspapers and on mainstream television and all that. So that's why you need alternatives. And you need alternatives to Pacifica as well. The more, the better. It's 10:42. Program is brain damage. We'll be taking phone calls and all kinds of neat things like that. But, you know, this is an important year for a lot of us. Well, not a lot of us, but maybe some of us. All right, a couple anyway. 20 years ago, Amtrak was founded, and Alberta Hunter sang a song about Amtrak once that I really like. It's called Amtrak Blues. And we're going to completely ruin it by speaking over most of it, but I thought I'd get in a few words edgewise.
Come here, help me. Help me, cause the man I love is gone. Oh, yes, come here and help me. Help me, cause the man I love is gone. Oh, help me. I'm so confused and worried, I can hardly carry on. Oh, hey. Oh, help me. Oh, trouble. Dark days just can't last always. Lord, I know. Oh, I said trouble and dark days just can't last always. Oh, help me, help me. So I'm gonna keep on struggling. I know I'll see brighter days. Please help me, somebody. Help me.
And what we have here are excerpts of an article called One Man's Amtrak, Favorite Views from a Veteran Photojournalist named Mike Schaefer. This comes from the latest edition of Trains Magazine, the magazine of railroading. And railroading in the good sense, not the nasty sense. If Washington, D.C. is the brain of Amtrak, then Chicago... Sorry, Alberta. Chicago is the heart. More than 50 trains a day gather in the Windy City, where Amtrak, in the late 1970s, unveiled a new locomotive and passenger car maintenance base, a phoenix that rose from the ashes of an outmoded, dilapidated Pennsylvania and Penn Central servicing facility. On a summer 1988 day, I monitored the Broadway Limited, possibly my favorite Amtrak train, and in my favorite city, standing on a ready track under a looming and changing Chicago skyline. In due time, train 40s can... consist? Must be a train word I'm not familiar with. In due time, train 40s consist will be shunted back into Union Station, which itself is undergoing a phoenix transformation this year as... owner Amtrak marks its 20th anniversary.
I love him, yes, I love him. Oh, I... don't mind dying. Oh, help me. Yes, help me.
Amtrak behind the scenes has always fascinated me.
Drink his blood like wine.
Ugh. While we might imagine that its decisions are made by a faceless... monolithic power in Washington, it's all the work of people. At Washington HQ during the purple paisley 1970s, two Amtrak designers discussed chair and floor fabrics. That's on the photograph on the left. Although passenger train technology remains basically unchanged from 40 years ago, Amtrak has its up-to-date side. There is the revitalized Washington Union Station. And even in the stoic Midwest, there is the Amtrak Greyhound Depot in downtown Battle Creek, Michigan. That's on the right, with its sleek interior.
I love my old books, the corners and nooks of my old home and the old friends.
In quick need of a modern image, Amtrak turned to France for 6 off-the-shelf turbine-powered train sets. Delivery of the first 2 was in 1973, followed by 4 more in 1975. And their first assignment was Chicago-St. Louis. Eventually, they also ran to Port Huron, Michigan, Detroit, Toledo, and Milwaukee. Braving a grain elevator roof without a side railing, I captured one of the grounded airliners whipping north on Illinois Central Gulf's former GM&O main line in May 1975 at Shipman. Incongruous sight on the Illinois prairie. And it's breakfast time on a fresh spring morning in Arkansas in 1975, as the Inter-American speeds towards St. Louis. I've had uncountable fine meals on Amtrak over the years, but this particular one stands out. The serenity of only a partially filled car. The aroma of coffee. The pleasant employees, the fresh flowers at the table, and of course the meal itself. Fresh eggs, sugar-cured country ham, and grits, all served on Amtrak China. Among all the meals and all my Amtrak rides, this was tops. Folks, I wish you could see the picture of that. But there's only so much radio can do. Happy birthday, Amtrak. I can't believe they're only 20 years old. Feels like they've been around forever. And soon Amtrak will be coming to Stony Brook from what we reported last week here on this very program. Yes, we started a rumor here, and hopefully it'll come true. Amtrak service between Port Jefferson and Albany. Can you believe it? a public service announcement from the specials here on WUSB in Stony Brook. The program is Brain Damage. The phone number is 632-6901. Taking some phone calls after the hour. Talking about life, the universe, and nothing in particular. Tripods, of course, coming up at 11. Find out what they're up to. We've got some important things to update you on. Stay tuned. Because there are no existing versions with a release number of 2. The get command retrieves the latest delta prior to release 2. And it changes the new version number to 2.1. Versions with a release number of 2 already existed. This command would have retrieved the most recent one.
Thank you.
A script that noisily but cautiously empties the working directory. Echo. The working directory is PWD. Echo. Delete all files in PWD / C. Read answer. Case answer in. Why, yes. Echo, ouch, bang, splat. RM star. Echo, we got him, boss. Echo, files remain untouched. ESAC. Admin - iBlitz S dot blitz. No ID keywords. CM7. Switch 1, demonstration of a switch control structure. This routine tests the first command line argument for yes or no. Any combination of upper and lower case characters. Test that argv1 exists. If argv equals 0, then echo usage switch 1, yes, no. Exit 1. Else. ARGV1 exists. Set up switch based on its value. Switch ARGV1. Case of yes, case of yes. Echo argument 1 is yes. Break SW. Case of no. Case no. Echo argument 1 is no. Break SW. Default case. Default. Echo argument 1 is neither yes nor no. Break SW. End SW. End if. If your system does not provide LP, it probably has LPR. If it has both utilities, use LP. Do not use both utilities at the same time. The LP stat utility displays the status of jobs in the printer queue. Without any options or arguments, LP stat displays the status of all printing jobs you started with LP. The cancel utility aborts a job that you started with LP. You must call it with an argument, the job identification number of the job you want to cancel. The LP utility places one or more files in the line printer queue. It provides orderly access to the printer for several users or processes. You can use the cancel utility to remove files from the queue and the LP stat utility to check the status of files in the queue. The LP utility takes its input from files you specify on the command line or from its standard input. It sends a unique identification number to its standard output and the specified files to the printer. You can use the identification number with the cancel utility to cancel the specified job. PS utility is determining the PID number of the background process running a program named XPROG, and the kill utility terminating XPROG with a signal number 9. If your login shell is the corn or boron shell, you can run the following command to terminate all your jobs and lock yourself out. Kill-9-0. You should not run this command if you are a super user.
Radio Free Long Island, in affiliation with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, proudly presents the exciting adventures of the Tripod family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. As we look in on Kathy and Howard today, they are still in the tunnel system of Nice, and they're still looking for the statue with their friend Boris. As we look in, we hear them.
There's so much mud and slime and things around us, Howard.
Yeah, well, at least we can see where we're going with these fluorescent lights.
Incidentally, Boris, how come there are light switches down here in the sewers of Nice?
Well, it was a bureaucratic mix-up, Mr. Tripod.
No?
The sewer system got a complete electrical system, and City Hall got an assortment of manhole covers.
Is that so?
Yeah.
You know, there sure are a lot of stories connected to this place. It's amazing I never knew about this entire sewer system until now.
Be careful, Mr. Tripod. It is particularly slimy where you are now standing.
Oh, yes.
Watch your step. Yes, there is quite a history to the sewer system. Some good and some not so good.
What do you mean by that?
Ooh! Howard, did you hear that?
Yes. Yes, I did, Kathy. I wonder what that was.
Come. We must be off to search for the hidden statue.
Right. That is what we're here for, after all.
Yes.
But what was that you were saying before, Boris, about the bad part of the sewer system's history?
Oh, it's nothing for you to trouble yourself over, Mr. Tripod.
But even so, Boris, I'd still like to know.
We tripods are on a continual quest for knowledge, you know.
Exactly. Now, I'm not going to go crazy over some silly story. I just want to know the facts.
Well, if you are certain that you will not act like a baby, I will tell you.
Please, do.
It is said that many years ago, when the sewer system was first constructed, a small cemetery had to be destroyed to allow the work to continue. Many of the workmen were reluctant to proceed, but the sewers were built nonetheless.
Interesting story. Well, that wasn't too bad, was it?
Wait! There is more.
Oh?
According to this account, every man who helped build these sewer systems died a sudden and violent death inside the sewers themselves.
That is remarkable, isn't it, Kathy?
Wait! There is more.
Oh, what?
When the sewers were finally completed, something very mysterious happened. Outside each and every entrance, a sign appeared which read, "All who enter here are doomed." And to this day, nobody has been able to take down those signs.
Now, wait a minute. Now, we entered the sewers a little while ago, and I didn't see any sign like that. Did you, Kathy?
No, I didn't see anything quite so ominous, Howard.
So I really can't take much faith in a silly ghost story like that, Boris.
And there was a sign, Mr. Tripod. I carefully stood in front of it so that you would not read it and perhaps chicken out.
Well, even so, I still don't see any need to believe silly stories. Do you, Kathy?
Oh, of course not, Howard.
Listen, there it is again.
Oh, it's only the wind, Howard. It's only the wind.
Of course, that's all it is. What is it, Boris?
Well, according to my calculations, we should be right underneath Wally Chuberg Street right now.
So that means?
That means the treasure is near.
Where should we be looking?
Well, you can look on the ground. See if you see anything peculiar. I'll look up towards the ceiling.
Okay. Kathy, are you going to help me?
Oh, of course. At last, the moment we've all been waiting for. I can hardly wait to see Charlie's face when he sees us bringing home that statue.
Well, let's not get too enthusiastic, Kathy. We haven't found it yet. I just hope we can get out of this place as easy as we... Now, I don't care what anybody says. That was not the wind.
And so the tripods get deeper and deeper into the Nice sewer system. Will they ever get out? And if so, will they ever find the statue? You want to be with us next time when we'll hear Pop say,
"Hey, whatever happened to me?"
That's next week on the exciting adventures of the Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
There's one thing I must say before I go. I love you, you know. I'll be thinking of...
Hello, this is Teresa Sapolsky inviting you to tune in to the Polka Country USA show every Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
I love you all the while. With your
your cute little ways. Won't you promise that you'll save your...
Yes, and that's coming your way tomorrow night at 6 o'clock here on WUSB. And thanks for all the calls that we've been getting. People really are still moved by readings from Unix, and it's good to know that, because it's the kind of thing I haven't done in a while. And it's good to know that there's an audience for that kind of a thing. You know, it's good to know that we can have a regular show. Imagine that, Unix poetry readings every week. Well, that's something to think about in the future anyway. It's 13 minutes after 11 o'clock, and I guess it's as good a time as any. Yes, as good a time as any to reach out and play an exciting game of Confuse the Operator. Oh, they're out there, and they're waiting for us.
New York telephone. One moment, please.
Operator?
Hello, I need overseas information, please.
Yes.
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
Rousing finish. I always like this part.
AT&T, may I help you?
Yes, hello. I need overseas information, please. This will be for Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia.
One moment.
Oh, she's not happy to hear that. I'll bet she's never called Mongolia before. A lot of activity there tonight, huh? Listen to that. I guess it's all those people making Mother's Day calls. The day before Mother's Day. Well, actually, it's Mother's Day in Mongolia. Did you know that? That doesn't sound like a Mongolian.
CIRC, how can I help you? Operator calling from a non-coin, 516-632-6000. He's calling from a university, operator.
Okay, so they can't be paid there?
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm just trying to reach information here.
What country, sir?
This would be for Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. Thank you. You wouldn't have to know what time it is over there, would you?
Not really. I have Soviet Union time, Moscow time, but I think it would probably be different.
Yeah, it's pretty far to the east of that.
Right. Let me see if I can find out for you.
Let's see, we've gone through three operators already. Haven't really confused anybody, though. That's part of the requirement of this program is to confuse the operator. Sometimes they do a fair job of confusing
themselves.
Okay, the
time is 11:15 a.m.
Okay, and that would be on Sunday, right?
Right.
Okay.
And what is the number in Ulaanbaatar?
Well, you see, I'm trying to find the number.
Okay, sorry.
The last name is Tripod, T-R-I-P-O-D, and the first name should be Kathy with a C, C-A-T-H-Y. Calling Kathy Tripod to wish her a happy Mother's Day.
I'm going to have to try and reach directory assistance in Moscow.
In Moscow?
Yeah. I believe we take these calls through Moscow.
I see. Okay, fine.
One moment, please. Let me double check on that for you.
Okay. Through Moscow. Moscow to Mongolia, just like the train. That's how you get there by train. They said it was 11:15 a.m. Wait, Kibret, you know the time in Mongolia? How is that possible?
I know the time in every city in the world.
Oh, you have a little thing. What is that? Fred has like a computer type thing here that I guess tells you. Have you compensated for daylight savings?
I'll try and reach directory.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. It's always good to thank the operators now and then so they don't get angry. So you punch it, there's a little globe here, and you punch in the name of the city, and Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, plus 1300. What does that mean?
Plus 13 hours.
Plus 13 hours, 12:16 p.m. Hmm. Should I tell them? Maybe AT&T has all the wrong records. All they have to do is get one of those little devices, and they can find out the time of any city in the world. Is Stony Brook on there? New York, okay. Well, I guess we have to settle for that. Ah, here we go.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling.
Oh, she's getting frustrated. Hear how hard she's banging those keys?
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling.
Busy circuits, I'm still trying
that. Oh, is that in Mongolia or Moscow?
Moscow.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling.
She's getting angry.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling. Your call cannot be completed at this time in the country you are calling.
Look, I'm stuck in the
TV. Sorry, sir. I can't even get a circuit now to Moscow. All I can ask you is to try back in a little while.
Well, now, is Moscow the only way to get there?
Yes.
It is.
They put our calls to Mongolia through Moscow.
Does Mongolia have its own country code that we can use?
No.
Or we can't dial them direct?
No.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time and effort.
Sorry, I couldn't help you out.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you anyway.
Using AT&T. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, once again, our mission has ended in failure, but pay no mind to that. The important thing is we reached out and confused somebody somewhere along the line. And we do know that whether it's 11 or 12 o'clock tomorrow, it's Mother's Day in Mongolia. I want to send that one out to Vic at Taco Bell. This is a guy that we victimized last week. Found out where it came from, which is always fun. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Please give us a call and let us know what fun things you've been up to this week and what's happening out there in the real world. I've got a copy of two papers that a couple of people in my house decided to go out and buy, the National Examiner and the... What's this one? News Extra. I've never seen that one before. It doesn't have a very catchy name. News Extra? What kind of name is that? This one is boring. Really boring. I mean, I didn't see anything in here that was even... I mean, look. Save. Baby in knife siege. Safe after five-hour ordeal. It might as well be Newsday. You know, this is... We as favorite soap star be gone by summer's end. It's garbage. There's nothing in here. Okay, now this is good. This is good. Reagan divorce shocker. Ron devastated by Nancy's affair with Sinatra. My marriage is over, he tells pals. Can you imagine if Nancy had married Frank Sinatra? She'd be Nancy Sinatra? Think about that.
You already have a Nancy Sinatra.
Can you imagine two of them? All right. Now, the thing with this is always trying to find the story that's on the front page. And never, for some reason, there's some unwritten rule that says, thou shalt not tell you the page number of the main story. Because when you're standing there at the supermarket checkout line, you got to go through the whole newspaper, and sometimes you run out of time and you wind up having to take the thing with you in order to find out what's on the cover. So, okay, here we go. Divorce for Ron and Nancy Reagan. How can anyone... Oh, wait a minute. I'm starting in the middle of the story. This is not laid out very well. It starts down here. In a shocking development that has both Hollywood and Washington in a tizzy, Ronald Reagan has announced plans to divorce Nancy. I guess we all knew this was going to happen eventually. The ex-president, stung by allegations in Kitty Kelly's book that his wife had an affair with Frank Sinatra, has told friends his 39-year marriage is over. Ron has taken this very badly, says a close friend of the 80-year-old ex-president. As soon as Nancy Reagan, the unauthorized biography, came out, he confronted his wife about the accusations. He told her, "I've always loved you very much, and we've been through thick and thin together. But now I simply have to know, did you or did you not have an affair with Frank?" And when Nancy became angry that he would even think such a thing and refused to answer him, he told her he wanted a divorce. According to Kelly's controversial book, Nancy and Sinatra started their relationship while Reagan was still governor of California. You know, there's a hush that's fallen over the whole studio. I guess this is kind of a solemn moment. The end of an era. I haven't felt this way since King Zog of Albania was driven out. The Reagans and Sinatra were friends from their Hollywood days, says a source close to the former First Lady, so Nancy had plenty of excuses for inviting him to the governor's mansion. And he would often stay overnight in their guest room when Ron was out of town on business. But Ron never suspected a thing, because he's a daft fool, that's why. That's my little personal injection there. He always thought of Frank as a respected friend. You know, if only he had asked a couple of people, you know? If only he had asked his, the people he was serving. We could have told him. We could have told him a thing or two about the realities of life. But no, he wouldn't. Even when people around him started making snide remarks about Frank and Nancy, he stuck to his guns. As for Nancy, she was as cool as a cucumber. When pressed, all she would say was, "How can anyone make such accusations? My life only began when I married Ronnie. Besides, I believe in true love. Staying with one man all your life is exactly how things should be." But according to document evidence presented in Kelly's book, Nancy didn't often practice what she preached. She wanted to end her affair with Frank after she became First Lady, says the source, but she just didn't have the strength to do it. She once said of Frank, "He's the kind of man every woman dreams of. Strong, confident, and powerful." So, when Frank called her up in 1980 to congratulate her after she became First Lady, Nancy let him know she was available to continue their affair. She invited him to the White House every chance she got, and they had numerous romantic interludes right under Ron's nose. Kelly's book, shocking, isn't it? Kelly's book says that just about everyone in the White House knew what was going on. Everyone, that is, but the president himself. There's nothing really unusual in that, I guess. Why should his personal life be any different from everything else? For one thing, says a White House insider, Mr. Reagan was often busy with affairs of the state. I won't touch that one with a 6-foot pole. He realized his wife had a lot of entertaining to do, but he didn't know just what kind of entertaining she was doing. Often, Mr. Sinatra would come in the back entrance. The security people had strict orders to let him pass. He and Mrs. Reagan would then spend a good part of the afternoon together with orders not to be disturbed. That went on for the 8 years the Reagans were in the White House. Now that the ex-president has been made aware of what was going on, he's more hurt than angry. Ron feels that the marriage was a sham, says his friend, and that Nancy only used him to get what she wanted out of life. Reminds me of Mao Zedong's widow. And you know what happened to her. Of course, we didn't get a cultural revolution out of Nancy Reagan, that's for sure. He told me I was her ticket to the White House. When she was talking about true love, I guess she meant someone else. But Ron's not out to get revenge. He just wants to get rid of Nancy as quickly as quietly as possible. It's sad, really. He's suddenly a lonely old man without even the comfort of a loving wife beside him. What do you think? Get that smirk off your face. What kind of disrespect are we showing here?
There's a telephone operator that would like to make a comment about what you were talking about.
It's a telephone operator?
Yeah. On
what?
Line
They're coming here? Oh. Is a telephone operator calling here?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Am I in trouble?
No, she's not upset with you.
Oh.
She just wants to make a point.
It's not a phone cop. I don't like those phone cops. You know, they make me nervous. Okay. On the phone here?
Yeah.
Telephone?
Line one.
Okay. Then I'll, that's why you were standing here for 10 minutes. I kept the phone operator waiting. Well, it's not the first time, I guess. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi, you're a phone operator.
Yeah.
Oh, how you doing?
Good.
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I don't know if you realize what goes into being a phone operator.
Well, you're not on duty right now, are you?
No, I just got off.
Okay, well then,
we were listening to you in the office.
The phone company office?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So you know when I come in on the switchboard, it could be could hit anybody there, huh?
Well, we're local. We're 516 directory.
Uh-huh. You're 516 directory? You know, I just called you guys a little while ago, and it took about 20 rings for you to answer.
We've been in a situation that's called call waiting all night. The number of operators that were put on tonight based on anticipated traffic was insufficient.
Ah, does that happen often?
It actually came up because the weather was so good. We've got the Hamptons and Flyer Island started already.
So wait, when the weather is good, people call information?
When the weather is good, people come out from the city to their summer homes earlier than anticipated, prior to Memorial Day.
I see.
And of course, in the Hamptons and on Flyer Island and in the vacation spots, numbers aren't in the actual phone directory that you have at your home because they're new listings.
Because they're new listings. I didn't think about that. So traffic
is always, always on Long Island much heavier in the summer.
I had to wait all that time because of all these people out on the East End who are going out to their homes there and wanting
but
to socialize.
You should never wait more than 10 rings. So if you wait more than 10, we're not doing our job.
Well, it went a long time, and then it turned to another kind of ring, and I had the feeling I was being transferred someplace else because they didn't even know what Suffolk County was.
Ring, and you may have been switched off into an office in Queens that handles the overflow.
Wow, that certainly is fascinating.
Well, on behalf of New York, tell my apologies.
That's okay. It was enjoyable. I mean,
when you're an operator, it's always an apology.
Yeah, I can imagine. Do they really look over your shoulder a lot and see what you're doing?
Not physically, but they plug in at a console in the center of the room and listen to you.
Uh-huh.
And if you use the wrong tone of voice or an improper phrase, something that's not in accordance with the guidelines you're taught, yes, you're in trouble.
So you can't cuss out a customer or...
No.
Even suggest competition or anything like that?
No, you cannot. Even if someone calls up and says, I want a taxi in XYZ town, you can't say, well, I know of this one. You have to say, do you know the name? We can't even suggest one because that's unfair to the competition.
Uh-huh. That's certainly true. Now that you're not on duty, what are some of the things that you would like to be able to say to customers when they call you?
Nothing. Yeah, I mean, customers are customers. You deal with nasty people in every walk of life.
Uh-huh.
You know, people call up and they're angry and they're fine, and the only ones you want to get rid of are the jerks who are spending 45 cents a call to, get their jollies on the line.
Uh-huh.
But it's costing them money to do it.
Yeah. How unreasonable do people get? I mean, do they call you up expecting to know
the
time and everything?
Well, my last call tonight was a woman who wanted Harold Brown on Long Island.
Oh, Harold Brown. Good old Harold Brown, right? Somewhere on Long Island, huh?
Well, there are 72 Harold Browns on Long Island.
Now, does your computer terminal say there are 72 Harold Browns?
No, I counted. I mean, you can tell by the number of screens you have.
I see.
23 per screen.
Uh-huh. And she had no idea what town?
No. And she hadn't seen him in over 40 years.
Okay. But she was adamant about this.
Well, I explained to her that I couldn't help her until she found out where he lived, and she said that wouldn't be possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Boy, think of it, though. 40-year reunion. It's in your hands.
If she wants, she can keep calling back and get all of them, but that's not... It has to be for real volume, about 100 or more listings.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, services such as mail order houses would call up and use that to verify addresses or things.
Uh-huh. Now, see, when I make calls. I very rarely call local directory assistants. I usually end up calling directory assistants in some foreign land somewhere. So I guess.
Well, that's a little different. That's AT&T.
Yeah. Well, AT&T hooks you up to
to whatever the local company is, or in some cases, AT&T has access to the records.
Uh huh.
AT&T actually accesses into the local company's system.
Well, that's convenient, I guess.
Well, they're going to start doing that with New York State.
What are they going to do?
Access the local system.
Okay, and how will that work? What would it mean for us?
It won't mean anything for us locally. It just means that somebody calling from California will not be connected to a local operator. She'll just, deal with an AT&T operator.
Oh, that's interesting.
Cool.
But the cost will still remain the same, right?
That depends. New York Telephone charges for information locally. Your long-distance provider may or may not charge you for an information call you place to another state or country.
Yeah, they don't charge for other countries, but they do charge for other states.
That depends on which service you're with. Some charge and some don't.
Uh-huh.
May be with a service that doesn't charge.
The only company I've ever found that can actually get overseas information is AT&T. I haven't found any.
I can't comment on that.
Yeah, no, you can't do that. Now, how many people work in your office at one time?
Are physically present at one time, or how many total operators?
Now, how many of you are there in a room at one time?
It depends on the time of day.
Uh-huh.
At 10 o'clock at night, there's only going to be a dozen. In the middle of the day, there may be 80.
I see. So in the wee hours of the morning, then there's 12 or less of you dealing with all the needs, all the information needs of Long Island, I guess.
Very few, yeah.
Right.
It depends on the day. Obviously, on New Year's Eve, there are going to be more of us.
Uh-huh. Well, do you enjoy your job?
To a certain extent, yes.
And how long have you been doing that for?
Since I was 15 years old.
15? They hired you when you were 15?
Offered entree. This was my summer job while I attended high school and while I attended Stony Brook.
Wow.
I am an alumnus.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
It can be mind-numbing work, but it can also be very nice to help people. And it's the only job I know with very good benefits and very flexible hours.
Uh-huh. They are flexible, then.
I can work, any time of day or night.
Well, that's
always open.
But, you can't just saunter in whenever you want. They
well,
can't tell you
but
what
I can
your hours
arrange
are.
My schedule and
I see.
My other needs.
Now, can we look forward to anything changing? I know something. I know something you probably don't think that I know, but I know it. That when you pick up the phone and say, hello, this is Mrs. Smith, that's actually a recording, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't attempt to hide that because it sounds different than our live voices.
It does. When you think about it, it sounds different, but a lot of people seem to think that that's the person when they pick up the phone.
But when you're taking 2,000 calls a day.
You don't want to say that 2,000 times, of course.
Well, it's not only that. The voice goes.
Right. So you really don't have to say anything if you pick up the phone.
But we have to acknowledge the customer or we can be suspended.
In what way acknowledge the customer?
When you say to me, I want Joe Smith on Elm Street, I have to say thank you or I'll check that or let you know. I can't just leave you hanging in midair.
I see.
There is a prescription for the entire call. If a call is going perfectly, it follows the formula. And if you are not following the formula, then it's perceived to be your fault, and you can get in trouble for it.
Now, do you have to press a button to pick up a call that has come in automatically?
They come in automatically. You cannot stop them.
You can't stop them. So if you're choking or something...
There's a sneeze button.
There's a sneeze button. Okay, so when you hold the sneeze button, that means...
Your sneeze button. It just puts the person on. You can still hear them, but they can't hear you.
So they just keep coming into your head as fast
actually,
as...
Actually, especially if you have an in-the-ear headset, yes. They physically come into your ear.
That's incredible. And then they hear the recording. Do you hear the recording of you saying, hello, this is so-and-so?
You hear the recording saying, hello, this is Pat, New York Telephone Pat. You don't hear the one at the end that gives the number.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, there wouldn't be much point to that. But you press, you find the particular listing on your screen.
I can't go into the specifics because it is classified information. It would benefit the competitor.
But New York Telephone doesn't have any competitors.
We are going to have competition now with AT&T in the local market.
I guess that's true. When is that going to start?
It has started.
It has started?
It has started. And, if, for example, if you're a big business and you want to avoid directory calls, you can now purchase our software.
I heard about that. It costs $10,000, doesn't it?
It's expensive, but, yeah. In certain applications, it would be worth it.
I think you get it on a little CD-ROM, and you get every listing in the county?
Yeah, and, up to current. And you can, you are updated. And that may very well put the operator out of business. We may become a thing of the past.
Yeah, I know CWA people are pretty concerned about that kind of thing, automation. I mean, they're automating everything. Although they've taken away the automated repair service, I've noticed.
It didn't work out
because people didn't... I mean, I love playing with that little machine, but apparently no one else did.
Well, that's just it. People were playing with it.
Uh-huh.
And, people who had legitimate repair complaints couldn't get through and a legitimate repair couldn't be told from a prank.
Well, the thing is... I compared it to reporting a problem to a human and reporting a problem to the machine, and the machine took about three times as long because you had to go through all these menus.
Eventually a human had to step in and check the machine at some point.
Uh-huh.
So it made it sort of redundant.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't a perfect system. It wasn't a good program.
Now, New York Telephone also has automated collect service now. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, and that is... of great concern to the members of the CWA because, of course, it puts humans out of business.
Right. I can place a collect call and not deal with an operator at all. And,
of course, as a member of the CWA, I would ask you please not to do that. I would ask you to insist on the human voice.
How does one do that? Because
hold on for the voice.
Just hold on. Okay.
Because you're putting working people out of business in a time when it's, too many of us are out of work.
Okay, so I'll pass it on to all the listeners here that hold on for the human. But the thing is, it takes longer than ever before to get a human. It takes about 30 seconds now as opposed to 5 seconds to get a human operator.
As people retire or are moved out to other positions or promoted, they're not being replaced.
Right. And that's something that we're seeing reflected in a lot of different fields as
we're
well.
We're seeing it in every field.
Mm-hmm.
The economic situation on Long Island is very sad. New York Telephone is very good to us. It's very generous to us. It's of great concern to us that we are being replaced by robots.
Uh-huh. Well, we certainly will insist on the human aspect and not the robots, because the humans are a lot more fun.
Well, you know what it is? It can be very... I know that there are snotty operators out there, and I know it can be very frustrating sometimes to wait and to deal with an operator... And you have something in your head that you're saying, and you know it. And the operator's going, I don't get it, could you repeat it, whatever.
Right.
Because she may not be familiar with that place. For example, I live in Suffolk County. People call me from Nassau all the time and think I know this place. I've been there.
Uh-huh.
And, it can be frustrating, and they think I'm stupid or whatever. But when an operator does a good job, very few people say, hey, you did a fabulous job, let me tell your supervisor, and that doesn't, it doesn't get into their file. And in any other job, it goes, when you do a good job, it goes in your file. But when you're an operator, nobody ever says anything about the good part. They only tell you about the bad part.
Uh-huh. What can we do to,
When you're real satisfied with an operator, say, could I have your supervisor for a commendation? And just tell the supervisor, Jane or Mary or Sue did a great job, and they'll put it in our files.
Really? Okay.
And when we do a bad job, of course, you can ask for the supervisor and tell her about that, too.
Uh-huh. Except usually when an operator does something, she's gone after she does it, and you can't get her back.
No, you are reconnected. If you hold on after the recording gives your number, you'll hear the phrase, if you need further assistance.
But don't you get a different operator?
You get a different operator, but if you've been paying attention, you get the name at the beginning of the recording.
Okay, yeah, so we should pay attention to the name as it comes across.
Well, if you know you're going to have a tough request.
Some states give numbers. I think New Jersey gives operator numbers instead of names.
Yeah, we have operator numbers, too. You can ask an operator for her number, and she has to give it, or he, they're on mail.
Yeah, I've run across them.
Yeah, it's... For some people, disconcerting when they expect a woman to get a man and vice versa.
Let me ask you one more semi-technical question. What's the difference between dialing 411 and dialing 555-1212?
Well, here in Nassau, Suffolk, if you dial 411 or if you dial 555-1212, in both cases, you get Nassau, Suffolk directory. But 20 years ago, when I worked on paper directories, if you dialed 411 and you were in Suffolk, you got a Suffolk operator. And if you dialed 411 in Nassau, you got a Nassau operator. And to get the other county, you had to dial 555-1212.
I see. And you guys had to actually go through phone books then?
Yeah, it was a slightly different directory. But in some ways it was easier because, this way you're at the mercy of the computer to a certain extent.
Uh-huh.
It only pulls up what you put into it. But if it was on paper, you could kind of fiddle around with the page and you might see it.
Right.
But we're not supposed to go through rekeying. We're supposed to check the spelling the customer gives us.
Right. One final...
So the company, they make it a little harder to be nice to
right.
go out of your way.
Yeah.
Or the program does, I should say, not the company.
Uh-huh. And I guess it's the same program you've been using for years now. It hasn't changed?
For about 5 years, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it will be updated within the next 2 years.
Well, that's good. One final thing before we go on to some more calls. Do you have a particularly uproarious, funny story that might have happened to you as an information operator over the years?
Every night there's a funny story. We are, for a lot of people, their counseling service and their therapist.
Or what's one of your favorites?
I don't know. It can be anything. It can be Thanksgiving when we're inundated with calls on how to cook turkey.
The
week before Christmas when everybody calls and asks us what to get their parents for Christmas. I mean, people think we're information.
You really get those kind of calls?
Yeah, we get those calls.
What kind of people call information asking how to cook a turkey?
People don't know how to cook turkey.
They really think information has the answer.
They think we're information, yeah.
Well, maybe that's not a bad idea to have a service like that where you guys know everything.
But did you ever see the movie Desk Set with Katharine Hepburn?
Never did.
And Sir Tracy.
Uh-huh.
Catherine Hepburn worked in the research department of a large company, and she was available just to answer questions, and Spencer Tracy brought his computer in and tried to replace her, and he couldn't.
Well, computers will never replace humans, and we hope that you guys are never replaced by computers, certainly.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, well, maybe I'll run across your console someday.
Ask for Pat.
Okay, and keep on listening.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well... I guess it was bound to happen sooner or later that an operator would call us. But our number is 632-6901. Area code 516. And let's take some more calls. Good evening.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah.
How you doing? Jim Calcagno.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay. Listen, I wrote a scathing letter to Newsday this week and actually got my little card back saying thanks for writing the letter anyway. But
I've gotten that card a few times.
Yeah. But what do you think of... there's this little article in Newsday, a very small article, and it showed a blatant show of big businesses' control over government. The U.S. Department of Agriculture decided to do something slightly good for the U.S. public by changing the food wheel. Did you hear about that?
I didn't. The food wheel?
Right, the four basic food groups.
Okay.
They want to make a food pyramid. They made it. They did it. And they had meat, like on a tiny part of the pyramid, meat and dairy, and grains, fruit, and vegetables on the broad base on the bottom, saying this was should be the base of your diet, not the meats. And so the meat and dairy industry said to the Department of Agriculture, well, this stigmatizes us. We don't like it. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture just dropped it cold.
Well, I think part of the reason is that we haven't really heard a whole lot about this. Has this been publicized much?
Well, just this little tiny paragraph of Newsday.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, it actually could benefit, slightly, the U.S. public. I mean, most people know that, but here they are admitting it that, meat, you shouldn't be eating that much compared to the grains, fruits, and vegetables. And they want to come out and say this. And the meat and dairy just said, forget it.
I'm kind of surprised they would actually come up with something like that in the first place.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm also surprised that they wouldn't expect that kind of a reaction.
Right.
Well, don't be disillusioned, but do write more letters. Maybe we can get some more people to wake up. Hopefully we've gotten some people to wake up tonight.
Yeah, I always write letters, and they always send them back from Newsday.
Oh, they print them occasionally.
Yeah.
They just have a quota they got to fill.
Right. Okay, Rick.
Nice to call you. Good night. 632-6901 is our telephone number, and we're running out of time. So if you want to call in, you better do it soon, because we have, waiting in the wings, one of our all-time favorite features. Couldn't come at a more appropriate time. Talking about food wheels, food circles, food chains, locks and chains, chains and bolts. But the big question of the day, what's for lunch? The bigger question is, what's wrong with the phone? What's for lunch indeed?
Good morning. Today, Thursday, May 9th, at Kelly Cafeteria for lunch, chicken chow mein, fettuccine for Madeira. Hot deli menu is barbecue beef on a bun. Dinner is roast beef with gravy, chicken cacciatore, Monterey vegetable bake. Lunch at H is a taco bar, cheese ravioli, and the hot deli menu is pastrami. Dinner is baked chicken, sausage and pepper hero, and a vegetable quiche. Fourth cafeteria for lunch is chicken chow mein, fettuccine primavera, and their hot deli menu is barbecue beef on a bun. Dinner is beef with oriental vegetables, turkey filet with parsley sauce, and zucchini carrot casserole. The Fanny Bryce Food Mall is open for lunch and dinner, serving Italian, Mexican, Chinese, and American favorites. Tonight, the we'll be taking pictures at Worth Cafeteria and all day in the meal plan office. Thanks again for calling the FSA hotline.
Never mind that. Why do they take pictures, I wonder? I guess it's to preserve all the memories and flavoring and all that kind of thing. You know that Governor Cuomo wants to cut that service because of lack of funds? I mean, it's one of the most popular things around. So please, do what you can. Write letters, send telegrams, faxes, phone calls. Even a personal appearance at someone's door might swing some heads. It's important to know what's for lunch, you know? And, that kind of service should not be cut out by a billion-dollar deficit or anything like that. We have our priorities. All right, it's 11:50. Phone lines are absolutely dead as a doornail. 632-6901. Either everyone's mesmerized or everyone's asleep. And while we're figuring out which it is, we have our final feature for the night. One that has, over the last couple of weeks, gotten kind of an interesting following. We have some people suggesting various things that we should try. Of course, that's the stupid question of the week. Now, again, this is something that we invite our listeners to participate in because you've shown great promise in it in the past. Send your stupid questions to us, and these are like the most absurdly stupid questions you can think of to ask somebody on the telephone. We asked the guy over at Taco Bell last week, who I understand was is now listening to this program, describe how the drive-in works. Like, what is a drive-in? And what did we do the week before that? I don't even remember what we did the week before. $5 bill, right? We asked 7-Eleven if they took $5 bills and how much they were worth. Tonight we're going to be a lot more daring than that, folks. We're going to call up one of the donut shops around the area, and we're going to ask them if, in fact, they do sell donuts. And it's an important thing to know. You can send your stupid questions to Stupid Questions, care of WUSB, State University of New York at Stony Brook. Stony Brook, New York, 11794. And make them as moronic as you can possibly think of. We have different kinds of people. We've gone over this a few times. We've got the kind of people that will fall for everything you say and just explain things, no matter how absurd you get. You've got the kind of people that will think it's all a joke and just hang up. You've got other kinds of people that will just get very upset and walk away. And people that that just laugh hysterically. And for the most part, we've had some rather patient people answering the phones for us, and that's heartening. We're not getting an angry reaction at all. I guess it's sort of something that people like. You know, they like to be able to help other people out, and that's important. You know, it's real important. Okay, enough said about that. Without any further ado, let's tear into this feature. Again, our phone number, if we do have some time, if we don't get into an extended conversation about this, our phone number is 632-6901. We'll try to take as many calls as we can if we get any more than what's on the line now. Ready for anything. Well, almost anything. Yes, hello. Is this, I'm calling to ask if you sell donuts?
Yeah, this is Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay, you do sell donuts there.
Right.
Okay, and I can just... Do I have to make any kind of appointment, or can I just come in?
No, you can come in.
I can come in... What are the hours?
It's open 24 hours.
Oh, so it's open all the time.
Right.
I see. So I can just go in there and buy donuts any time of the day or night.
Right.
Okay, I understand.
Is this a trick question?
No, I don't think so. You see, I was kind of concerned because, as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not from around here. And I saw the listing for Dunkin' Donuts, and I wasn't sure if that was a name or if that was actually an establishment.
Oh, it's a chain of stores, a franchise of stores.
I see. See, it could have been some guy named Duncan, you know, and I wasn't sure about that.
Okay.
Okay, so I can just go in there any time.
Right.
That's very nice to know. Thanks for your help.
All right, bye.
Bye. What do you think? We think we made her night? Again, your stupid questions are welcome. In fact, your stupid questions are needed. And we can get a lot dumber than we've gotten, that's for sure. So something, you can go out and you can buy donuts. Isn't America wonderful? 24 hours a day! You know, I can't believe she asked if that was a trick question. I mean, she was rather doubtful, wasn't she? That's so sad when that happens. Good evening.
Hello, Eric.
How you doing?
I thought I might share something with those brain-damaged listeners out there who have been enjoying What's for Lunch and Stupid Question to Confuse the Operator.
Okay.
This involves a whole nother out-of-control bureaucracy that perhaps you can focus in on a future week. It's called Postman's Choice.
Postman's Choice, okay. What does this involve?
Well, here's how it works. You take a plain 3x5 card or postcard, and you address both sides of the card and put a stamp on both sides. And you put two separate addresses.
Oh, I love it. That is the best
idea. Put it in the mail, and you see what happens. And preferably, you can put it to two addresses where you can finally, determine whether it's arrived at one or the other. And perhaps this thing could bounce around in the mail for eternity. I mean, it could just approach the post of the post office of side A, perhaps.
Okay,
and then
so
somebody flips it over and goes, oh, it's supposed to be in California, not New Jersey.
So what we do is we come up first. The card has to be blank on both sides. It can't have an address form on one side because
right.
That gives them sort of a hint.
Right, a 3x5 card is probably the best.
3x5 card, you put a label on both sides and a stamp on both sides.
Right.
The stamp has to be on both sides, and it's just...
And drop it in the mail.
Drop it in the mail and see where it goes.
And it's postman's choice.
Postman's choice. That's so great. Now, do you think there's any way to get more than two?
More than two addresses?
Well, what if you filled the entire... What if you put a really big card in and you had like four on each side with stamps on all of them? You know, you could do that.
facing to the four corners of the globe. I'm not sure what would happen there. You might have a whole new take on this game.
Or how about this? How about you have perforated cards and you don't separate them? Okay? And you address all these things and see if they arrive as one piece or if they actually take the time to tear them all apart for you.
Well, Eric, obviously you've got plans for this game that even its inventor hasn't foreseen.
Well, I've got a dangerous mind. I've been told that by several people.
However, there's some kind of beauty to the original idea that I think needs to be worked on. I think concentrated on here.
All right, we're going to refine this. We're going to work upon this, put it into R&D a little bit, and we'll let you know what happens. Or you'll probably read about it in the papers.
Okay, I suggest to the listeners to try the very simple idea that was presented before you took it and ran with it. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, yeah, postman's choice.
I've had a card in the mail, at least 2 years. It hasn't arrived at either of the addresses.
So the postman has a third choice.
Well, no. You see, let's say you have one side of the card is addressed to a location, let's say New Jersey, and the other side has an address located in California. It's conceivable that the card would be moving from coast to coast, and midway through its arc across America, somebody realizes that it's heading in the wrong direction. In other words, it's heading for California, and somebody realizes, this is supposed to be New Jersey. It heads back to New Jersey, and
right.
Somebody says, no, this is going to California.
So the mail is handled by about four or five different offices along the way. So
absolutely.
It's got the odds of it landing on the same side all of those times.
Well, that's the beauty of it. That's why it never makes it anywhere, because it's too busy being rerouted.
And when it does make it, it's got all these cancellation stamps from all over the country on it.
Yes, some cards have been known to be obliterated because of that. There's nothing left of them.
Sir, that is ingenious. I have to ask you a question. Is that your idea, or did you get it from someplace else?
No, this is not my idea. This is an idea from a little-known art movement called Fluxus, of which Yoko Ono was a prominent member.
Uh-huh.
And this is a little game that one of the artists associated with those folks thought up, because they were very much... These are some of the originators of mail art, and things along those ideas. So they kind of approach the U.S. mail in a similar way that you approach the phone company.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing that with us. I'm now going to leave, rush home, and start working on my 3x5 cards.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
I don't know what happened to him at the end there, but that's our show for tonight, folks. Boy, a lot of mischief, making here. Get back to us in the weeks ahead and let us know what you've been up to. Stay tuned for Cabaret No Sound Test coming up next. We'll see you at all the fun times ahead. Be good, have fun, breathe in the air.
someday.